Bill Clinton in Indianapolis, what he told Indiana Democrats, the first debate in the race for governor, a computer analysis of the candidate expressions, and a union attack ad on Mike Pence. That, plus a new state license plate and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending October 12,
2012. Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, former President Bill Clinton came to Indianapolis for a Get Out the Vote rally. He came at the invitation of John Gregg, the Democratic candidate for governor, but he also campaigned for Senate candidate Joe Donnelly with help that included this attack on Republican Senate candidate Richard Murdoch.
What is this idea that it's my way or the highway? Let me tell you. I tell everybody all the time, I was raised to believe that nobody's right all the time. Now, maybe Mr. Murdoch is, I don't know. He's way right all the time, I know that.
Will the Clinton visit boost the chances of Indiana Democrats? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shello. Mike McDaniel, what do you make of the turnout at that rally? 3,000 people, well, they had turned away 1,000.
Anytime you have a former president of the United States in, you're going to have a big crowd. And this was designed to fire up the troops for a party rally, and that's what it was. And you'd expect that. I mean, the poll numbers in most of these races are so lopsided that they better fire up the troops. And I think
not
that's
in the
what
Senate
this,
race.
What is in the governor's race and the presidential race and most of the congressional races in Indiana. And so they better fire up the troops, and that's what they're trying to do. And especially if John Gregg's the one that made the invitation, especially in the governor's race. And so I understand them trying to do that. And Bill Clinton's entertaining. He always is. He's a great speaker. And that's what he's here for, to fire up the troops. But remember, you know, he lost Indiana the two times he ran here. So do I think he's going to sway anybody as far as independents go? No. Basically, he got the people who are Democrats or are going to vote Democrat and try to get them riled up, and that's what he did today.
So Joe Donnelly is saying that Bill Clinton is the last president to have a balanced budget and the last president to have a surplus. They're trying to make this about fiscal issues.
Well, it is about fiscal issues. I mean, it was the Bush administration that had the economic meltdown and embroiled us in two wars simultaneously and put past the donut prescription drug benefit without funding it. So, yeah, I mean, when you look for fiscal responsibility in Indiana, you look to Democrats for that. And Evan Bayh left with the largest surplus and had the most growth in jobs over the 8-year period of any governor in the state. So it's not surprising. And I think Bill Clinton, I agree with you, obviously, that he didn't carry Indiana. I think he's more popular now, having been so many years removed from the White House and having had the economic scene deteriorate after he left. I think he's much more popular now than he was then.
We keep talking about how this Senate race may come down to the Lugar Republicans. He made some pretty thinly veiled
They weren't thinly veiled.
outreach. Well, in his attacks on Murdoch, he said at one point that he was surprised that he didn't thank Richard Lugar and be gracious after the primary win.
Well, you know, he's trying to kind of turn that one around on all these questions about why Senator Lugar hasn't been more gracious and more, you know, accepting of Richard Murdoch. But I thought that with regard to the Donnelly race especially, President Clinton really homed on the message that they've been trying to home in on and did a very good job of trying to speak directly to those people who might be inclined, who are Republicans who might be inclined not to vote for Richard Murdoch. And to the extent that that message gets out and is received well, I think that could have an effect, however minimal. Even if they don't vote for Joe Donnelly, they might not vote for, he might make it okay for them not to vote for Richard Murdoch.
Right. This is the first of what are going to be a number of high-profile visits on both sides of this race. Next week, we're going to see, I believe, John McCain in here for Richard Murdoch. We're also going to see Chris Christie.
He's still with us?
Yeah.
John McCain is still in the U.S. Senate.
Good. That's
of course, John McCain didn't carry Indiana either. So if we use that as the measuring stick, then I guess everything's equal. This is in a race like this. When there is so much at stake, not just with this Senate seat, but as we've talked about before, this is the control of the U.S. Senate. You're bound to get the kind of attention that this race is seeing from surrogates, from supporters, high-profile former presidents, presidential candidates.
How about the president? There are a lot of Republicans who are saying that these guys don't want the president here, but he's got better places to be, right?
Well, sure. Of course he has to be other places, but they don't want him here. Did they invite him? No.
Well, we've had Mrs. Obama, and I'd be happy to have the president here.
You would, but they wouldn't.
What's interesting here is, John's right, there's more at stake here. It's whether the Tea Party controls the House and the Senate simultaneously, and whether people want that kind of extremism in Washington.
No, it's interesting. I don't know if it's part of a formal talking point that somebody actually crafted or if it's just happening naturally, but the phrase Lugar Republican, I think we're hearing that more in the last week or so than we ever did before. And I think what the clear attempt here is, and I don't know if
Senator Lugar was back in town again and apparently didn't have time to do a Murdoch endorsement.
Right.
Well,
I think it's pretty clear he's not going to, but I think by using the phrase Lugar Republican, it's a very subtle, or maybe about as thinly veiled, Jim, as you suggested these other references were, to suggest that just because you're Republican doesn't mean you're a Richard Murdoch Republican. And so I think you're going to be hearing more Democrats uttering those words, Lugar Republican, either coincidentally or by design here in the next three and a half weeks.
All right, the candidates in the race for governor met in the first of three debates this week.
Good evening.
The audience in the Zionsville Performing Arts Center witnessed a debate that was a sleeper for more than half the one-hour event, livened up only when Libertarian Rupert Bonham challenged the moderator for cutting him off too soon.
No, that's okay. I've been forgotten a few times.
The moderator needs a timer.
I'm kind of getting used to it, but that's what happens to a third party.
But when Republican Mike Pence compared his ideas to those of current Governor Mitch Daniels, Democrat John Gregg teed off.
You've never passed a piece of legislation in your 12 years in Congress, and you invoke Governor Daniels' name to kind of take a parody on a former Hoosier. I know Mitch Daniels. Mitch Daniels is a friend of mine, but Mitch Daniels shows up to work every day.
Then, for the first time in the campaign, Pence fired back, challenging Gregg's record as Speaker of the Indiana House.
According to public records at the State Budget Agency, for 5 of the 6 years that you led the Indiana State General Assembly, we ran deficits in the tens of millions of dollars.
Ann Delaney, were you surprised to see Pence engage?
No, I think Mike Pence has a pretty thin skin. But, you know, what's interesting about that the way he engaged there is apparently he forgot that during that period of time when John Gregg was Speaker of the Indiana House, the Indiana Senate, which passed the same budget, was controlled by the Republicans. Now, I know he hasn't lived here for decades, so it's not surprising he might be confused about that fact. But he needs to understand that the Democrats have never controlled both houses of the General Assembly while John Gregg...
Okay.
Was Speaker of the House.
Pence has run a front runner strategy here.
Absolutely.
He doesn't respond to charges. His campaign doesn't respond to charges. There's nothing in his ads. This is the first time we've seen him.
Because if you're attacked like that in a debate, you better say something back. And he's right. John had a deficit budget 5 of the 6 years that he was Speaker of the House.
He had a deficit budget.
It was a 5 of the 6 years.
Their balanced budgets is a structural deficit, which means they were spending
millions of dollars to cities and universities, and they spent more than they took in 5 of the 6 years that he was Speaker of the House. And what's wrong with this is when John claims he balanced budgets, he didn't. And so he says it in an ad. So, he said it actually, in this debate.
So the Republicans and so in the he's Senate making have it up. No role in that.
John makes a claim that he balanced budgets, and he didn't.
They did not.
He didn't.
They ended in the black, right?
They ended in the black.
He did not balance
budgets. They ended in the black.
They spent more money than they took in five of the 6 years.
If it's balanced, it's clear.
Let me attempt an explanation here. They did delayed payments, as you said, to schools and cities and universities, which meant that those people got their money, but they didn't get it on time.
Greg tried
to make the point in the debate that under Mitch Daniels there were cuts, so they never did get the money.
Well, that's true.
It's a tough argument to make. It's a tough explanation to make. It's Mike Pence's side of this argument is a lot easier to understand.
So is the argument that he never showed up for committee hearings
and
never
that's
passed the bill.
Well, that's an absolute lie.
Well, that's John.
It is true.
It is a lie.
That is why it's attractive to say.
Let's hear from John.
It's attractive to say somebody doesn't show up for work, somebody didn't pay taxes, there's just such simple concepts. Now, you're right. There's no nuance that's brought to bear here until after the fact when the fact checker world and other people are talking about it and trying to parse what was said. But it's hard to convey complicated ideas in any campaign setting. Certainly it is in a debate where you're limited to what 2 minute responses. So it's nothing surprising to know that the easier hit is the one that's going to resonate, and you can sum it up in 4 or 5 words and be done with it.
Well, Greg, after the debate, also tried to lay some of the financial problems during that time on 9/11, which may be accurate, but again, it's a tough explanation.
Well, anytime you have to go into the nitty gritty and the details of whatever it is that you're trying to explain, you often run the risk of losing the audience, and that's the unfortunate part here because there is a lot of nuance. No budget gets passed in the state without both parties signing off on that budget and the governor ultimately signing it. You know, it's a legitimate thing for John to say what he said, but it's also a legitimate question to raise on the other side because of the structural deficit. But does the general public understand that nuance? And unfortunately, it doesn't. And so that's where this charge countercharge and the problem.
I guess if you want to say one thing though, for John, Greg, he did get this response. You pointed out, Jim, that it had been a front runner's approach.
His front runner's approach has been total sanctimonious nonsense from the sign.
Well, but here you have free media, you have an audience.
He hasn't moved the numbers.
But the point is, it changed.
The problem is, he hadn't moved numbers. John Gray's 14 points down.
13, according to the most recent independent
poll. 13.8, and so it's 14 points down. He's 21 days away from the election day. So what he did in his debate was to flail away, and he didn't land anything. He needed to land, and he didn't.
Although he had to flail until the latter part of the debate.
Yeah, that's right, and he waited until the latter part of the debate.
One thing we've learned from this debate season, whether it's a vice presidential debate or a presidential debate, if you're going to come out swinging, come out as soon as that first bell rings.
A Purdue professor studied the facial expressions of the candidates during that debate, and he says Mike Pence won. Professor Kowal ran video of the entire debate through facial expression software and shared his findings via Skype from West Lafayette, where he says that the emotions expressed by Mike Pence appeared to be genuine.
I think that he probably made a greater emotional connection. He looked more like a leader because of the range of emotions that he was expressing, the control that he had.
Professor Kowal says he had to recalibrate the software to analyze libertarian Rupert Bonham.
He has a natural look of surprise.
And he also had problems with Democrat John Gregg because of Gregg's mustache.
I know he loves it, right? It's his brand, much like the Pringles guy.
But while it may help sell politics, the professor says the mustache may get in the way on a debate stage.
It is interfering with the emotional connection that voters can have with them.
Professor Chris Kowal there. John Katzenberger, do you think there's anything to that?
Well, let's see. Am I amused? Yeah, I think there is, because he can tell that I'm amused by this science or whatever it passes for science. You know, it's interesting, good for his research. I'm sure it has a lot to do with the consumer goods area and the focus groups and the understanding what people respond to when it comes to Pringles or whatever it is somebody's trying to sell. But I think it's a little too subtle when you're talking about the political process to.
Well, he's looking only at facial expressions. I think in John Gregg's case, he's maybe offering more insight into what's inside him than just through his expressions. But there's some truth here too, though, isn't there?
I'm no scientist when it comes to the 140 muscles that make up the human face, I suppose. I think I know when somebody's...
139, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's
all right. Well, some people have an extra. Some people have an extra one.
Another Republican math.
That's right. Well, I was rounding up just like they were a minute ago. And we've seen other debates where the people put vocal stress monitors on, and you can supposedly tell if somebody is engaging in a mistruth or is confident in what he or she
is
saying.
What is a mistruth?
A lie.
Is that a lie?
That's a lie, yes. I'm trying to be...
Is that a mistruth?
No, I wouldn't do that to you. So I don't know. I mean, you can probably over... I'm sure there's a value here, but at the same time, I don't know. Is he going to do this show? Let's see if we can do a report on this show.
My analysis of the debate was that John Gregg scored more points, but you probably needed to call it a tie because of the way Mike Pence engaged. But he says that the facial expressions tell him Pence was a winner. I'm sure you're going to buy that.
Well, no. I'll tell you what. When I was watching Channel 8 News and saw the tease for this particular piece, I started laughing before it ever came on because I thought, how ridiculous. Then I listened to what this guy had to say, and a lot of it made sense. I mean, when he talked about each one of the candidates and why he was saying what he was saying. So it's an interesting approach to this stuff. But I do think that he was right when Mike came off as more sincere and more gubernatorial than John did in this. And Rupert was just, I'm not sure where Rupert was.
Comic relief.
But the problem with that is when you're eating up 20 of the 60 minutes of a debate, I think he almost got in the way of what was going on as far as the conversation was concerned. And I think that was a distraction.
You're not buying this.
I just think it's great that people can make a living so many different ways.
He's teaching.
Good
that.
Answer.
He's teaching that to
well,
universities.
Well, I'm telling you right now, none of my grandchildren are engaging in that course.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should John Gregg lose the mustache? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, just trim it up a little. Last week's question was, should state lawmakers avoid social issues? 36% said yes, 64% said no. To take part in the poll, just go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Mike Pence is the target of attack ads this week. They come from an independent group. The ads are running in Indianapolis and Fort Wayne.
He's just like Richard Murdoch, Tea Party and extreme.
They attempt to use Mike Pence's own words against him in Fort Wayne. The Republican candidate brushed off the attack.
You know, I think people like candidates to talk more about the issues and less about each other.
Pete Remsen's a local lobbyist for the building and construction trades, is listed as the contact on a federal filing for the Believe in Indiana Political Action Committee. He didn't respond to calls or an email.
But it's clearly designed to be a hit piece.
State Republican Chairman Eric Holcomb focused on the fact that the new attack ad was handled by the same media buyer who places ads for the John Gregg campaign.
For them to think that there's no coordination is laughable and certainly doesn't pass the smell test.
John Schwanis, should John Gregg separate himself from that ad?
I don't think he will. I mean, in fact, the comment I saw that he made when somebody asked him about this, I don't think he was eager to talk about it, but he said, "What is anything in there untrue?" Which suggests to me that he's not rushing to pull that.
The ad mostly makes use of Mike Pence's own words.
Right. And it's
raise the question, is there anything in there untrue?
And I also don't, if the whole issue here is one of collaboration or collusion between a campaign and an independent or third-party committee, based on, and I think you were the one who reported this, Jim, there's no requirement.
There are federal laws that prevent that in federal cases.
But not state, right?
Not on the state level.
So even if we'll stipulate it is, so what, right?
Yeah. We've seen this before. In 2004, union-backed ads were targeted at Mitch Daniels. Didn't seem to make a big difference then.
Well, no, but it certainly got the governor's attention in 2004. And I think that they're exercising their right as an organization to put their opinion and their view out on an election. And as John was explaining, and as we've seen with the federal cases, the courts have held, and everyone believes that more is better. So, you know, how can you criticize them for making their point?
All right. It would appear, though, that there is some coordination here, because John Gregg was under some pressure to come up with tougher ads, and he's stuck with the ads where he's on camera. He takes some shots at Mike Pence, but he's on camera, and they're a different variety of ad, and now all of a sudden these come out. Was he waiting for these?
There is no evidence that there's any collusion, as you put it there. You know, you could make the same case. They use the same media buyer, and they're on the same TV stations. There you go. There's the. I mean, that's nonsense. You had Eric Holcomb carrying the negative for Mike Pence earlier in the campaign. I didn't hear Mike Pence say, "Oh no. Let's just talk about the issues. Let's not hear that nasty stuff." It's nonsense.
It's part of modern politics, is what it is, right?
Is this the ad where they make the two references to the two abortion issues?
I
think it is. Yeah. Those two issues are the same ones that Joe Donnelly voted the same as Mike Pence.
Oh, that's right.
And co-sponsored the one with Mike Pence.
That's right.
And so they're criticizing the same Mike Pence in this ad for two bills that Joe Donnelly voted the same way as Mike Pence. I find that fascinating.
No,
the same group.
That's right.
I think it is.
It is
and
right.
The same group is also doing direct mail, but they're trying to make the case that Mike Pence is an extremist, and they're trying to tie him to Murdoch.
They're calling
him and Murdoch peas in a pot.
They are, because he took the same approach on rape, on whether or not you only have abortion when it's violent rape.
Donnelly voted
any
with
other
Pence
kind.
On the one bill and co-sponsored the other one with Pence.
It's what
bill.
They referred to in this ad as the Aiken bill. Yes.
Yeah. I think the only real debate here is how effective they are. The notion of, even at the federal level now, you're not supposed to have collusion. All of that's gone. I mean, the rules have just fundamentally changed.
There are no
the super PACs and the third party groups.
All of these ads are wearing out people's mute buttons at this point.
That's true. Moving on, early voting started this week, and it's popular. 776 people voted early in Marion County on just the first day of early voting on Monday. That compares to 679 voters on the first day of early voting back in 2008. The higher totals continued through the week, despite what appears to be a reduced interest in this year's race. Mike McDaniel, what's the lesson behind the early voting surge?
I don't think there is a surge, for one. I've never understood the fascination with early voting, only from the standpoint that you can only vote once regardless anyway. I mean, I understand why people want to try to bank as many votes as they can and get people to go, but we've always had the ability to do it. It's called absentee ballots. And so you can vote early for 30 days
if you want to do it. Mistruth.
But you needed to be out of town or ill. Now you don't need an excuse.
Now you don't need an excuse, except the difference is you could always vote, and people did. And I don't get it. I mean, I just don't think it's a big deal.
The Republicans don't get it because they've tried to restrict. They've tried to restrict access to the voting polls all the time.
You don't get
they
2 points
for
voting.
They do it by voter ID. They do it by not allowing satellite voting, which is why the attendance of the voting percentage in Indiana is so low. But I applaud these people for coming out despite the Republican attempts to take their ability to vote away from them.
You don't get two votes for voting early. You only get
matter,
one.
Mike. That's
the point. That's exactly
vote.
Right. John,
and let them vote.
They
and
can.
Let them vote at satellite.
They can.
And
they can
vote
go vote anytime. They
John,
can vote
in 2008, in 2008 in Marion County, there was satellite voting as well as early voting. We don't have the satellite voting this time. We saw long lines. And
you got voter ID again, too.
But you're still you're seeing more voters this time.
Well, we're seeing more voters early. We'll wait and see whether we get ultimately more voters in 2012 than we got in 2008. I hope we do, but my optimism, I think, is tempered by the reality that more people are opting out of the system. And for whatever reason, whether it's the money, it's the loud and horrible nature of the ads that we just talked about, but I would like to see as open a process as possible.
I agree with that completely. The higher turnout, the better, and the more opportunities. However, my one caveat. I'm kind of a stick in the mud. I love Election Day. I, for one, enjoy going to the polls and the buzz and the excitement that takes place on Election Day.
You have a job that lets you do this. A lot of people don't have that option.
All right. Finally, Indiana's new license plate will celebrate the state's upcoming bicentennial. It has a blue image of the state's shape with 200 written across it, and it's encircled by 19 stars symbolizing Indiana as the 19th state. Lieutenant Governor Becky Skillman and former Congressman Lee Hamilton unveiled the new design this week.
We can't think of a better way of raising the awareness and preparing all of our people for the bicentennial than having millions of vehicles traveling our streets and our highways advertising this bicentennial.
And Delaney, what will that do for the sale of specialty plates?
You mean will it detract from the sale of specialty
plates?
No,
will people try to get a specialty plate instead of that one? I guess is what I'm
I kind of like the license plate.
You do? Okay.
Yeah.
It's a new approach, though. Usually they let people design it.
A contest. I think they wanted simplicity, and they got that. Look, we ought to be about trying to make the bicentennial in 2016 as big as we can. There's a lot of greatness to celebrate about Indiana, and we should do it in 2016.
There you go.
And the license plate's a good start. Just because you don't like it probably means everybody else will.
I just asked a question.
Yeah. I agree, Ann.
The best thing about me is seeing Lee Hamilton out there. I mean, it's good to see him, and he's
engaged.
Had some difficult challenges. It's good to see him back in the public spotlight.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.